And of course, our special guest, Richard C. Hoagland. We're going to talk a little bit more about this tie-in between what the Russians and what the Americans are doing, us. And then we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to have no problems taking calls for you later, Richard. The lines are already jammed up.
You know, some night we ought to just go another hour. Let all the affiliates go crazy.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I'll just... And there goes my clock out the window. No? You know, I have been amazed, though, with technology. I mean, here you are back in New Mexico. You send images to us, get them posted. I mean, isn't that something?
Well, by the way, I want to correct something. The images that Tim posted for us tonight, not Tom. I have Tom on the brain. Yeah, it's Tim Bunnell. He did a hell of a job. He actually got the images up. Then he got the text I wrote with him, so there are captions. And then you can go to enterprisemission.com, go to my Facebook page, join the conversation, because there's a lot of really interesting input. There is a guy who just posted. In fact, let me go look. Let me give him credit.
All right.
Because this think tank, is what we got an Enterprise Mission online think tank is what Facebook is. He has posted the most interesting old link. And let me scroll up here and see. His name is... Cal Shoemaker, and it's a blog.
I wonder if he's related to Gene Shoemaker.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Anyway, the headline is "Signs of the Time: Russian Air Traffic Controllers Hear Cat-like Alien Voices."
Yeah, I had that story earlier.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
Well, if somebody has shown up and they have a sense of humor, and they have a lineal connection to this ancient civilization, why not? Again, people have to understand. I mean, the Coast audience gets it. A lot of other people don't, but the Coast audience gets it.
They get it.
The only way you can figure this stuff out from the outside is by playing scenario roulette. You run various scenarios, and then you look for clues as to what's really happening. For instance, a testable clue in the idea the Russians are going to take their Phobos grunt mission and redirect it to YU-55 for a loiter mission, a sample return, super close-ups, all the cool stuff we'd love to see and may not for quite a while, is if they leave from Earth orbit suddenly, they resurrect that thing. It doesn't come down and fall in a crash in the Pacific, but it just suddenly disappears like the other two spacecraft. Remember those, the dead ones that were supposed to come in and rain stuff all over Los Angeles or Moscow or St. Petersburg, and suddenly they just disappeared? That's like setting us up for this thing disappearing, and no one will ask questions, which means they can do a clandestine mission, and nobody is going to ask, where did it go?
Jeez, I love it.
Don't
All right,
live in amazing times?
And give me this tie-in with the Russians and the Americans, and then let's take some
Well, plans. The thing that occurred that I think kind of upset some plans was the arrival of Elenine. Elenine, if I'm right, was long predicted in these ancient texts that folks like the Masons and the Rosicrucians and these secret societies have kept, you know, covered with cobwebs for centuries, if not millennia. And it was forecast, I think, in those texts that a messenger would appear, and it would be carrying an important part of our ancient history. And it was followed exquisitely on the web. No mainstream media, but a huge backlash, all this fear porn around Elenine. The way I know, unequivocally, it was artificial, sent by someone, is in the mathematical codes. Those codes, if you tally up all the coincidences, and even if you assume I'm wrong about half of them, just throw out half of them, there were so many that the ultimate odds against that being a natural thing and not sent by someone were like a trillion to one. You take those odds to Vegas, George, you and I would own the planet.
We sure would.
We would run the world.
Yes, we would.
So it was connected exquisitely to YU-55 because both of these little guys came around the sun and hit their mark, closest approach to the sun, on exactly the same date, which was September 11th. Now, when you say September 11th, everybody thinks, you know, 9/11 and New York and the Pentagon and, you know, Pennsylvania and all that horror, right? Wrong, pale face. That's not why 9/11 is important at all. 9/11 was an inside gun job by somebody because they were trying to kill the consciousness around that date, because it turns out that 9/11, September 11th, is exactly 111 days from the end of the calendar year. 111. In the year of 111111111.
That's right.
So, if you're setting up codes that ultimately tie back to the hyperdimensional physics, which is the key to our reality, which an ancient culture would try to bequeath to their dim, distant descendants as the way out of their trap, out of their box, out of their slavery, out of their imprisonment, out of everything that's wrong with this planet right now, including the dependence on fossil fuels, which is killing us economically and physically, you'd send them that message and you tie it in with, oh, and by the way, guys, if you're smart enough, you will follow this craft, this little vehicle, this aircraft carrier sized. I mean, how many times, George, in the mainstream media did that little thing, YU-55, get compared to an aircraft carrier?
Oh, all the time.
All the time?
Yeah.
More clues, more Roddenberry messaging. If it's going to be real, it's got to be in mainstream media. So those were codes going on back and forth between the in crowd, who themselves can't really believe they're in the middle of the soap opera. So I think when it was realized what YU-55 was, which is folks with computers and a bit more information than we have tonight, and they calculated that it was El Niño was going to go through the system in this incredibly coded trajectory, it would connect symbolically. Remember, they also live at the symbolic level with YU-55. I believe the Russians were tasked, because this is a coordinated effort, East and West. This is Obama talking to Putin, Putin talking to Medvedev, Medvedev talking to Obama. And the, remember, the Chinese are also part of the mix. They supposedly, the Russians, lobbied them really hard to get them to come on board the Russian mission. And supposedly now they're really upset and fried that that mission is stuck in orbit and they look like they've got egg all over their faces. Well, but they're going to be part of the biggest party in the solar system if they just cool their heels and wait a little while. And all the Europeans are also part of the Russian mission, right? If you go through their website, you'll see all the countries that are part with experiments on the Phobos Grunt mission, all of which are relevant to looking close up at whatever structures and ancient stuff is on YU-55. The ones who are not part of it are part of the American mission to call Curiosity to the surface, which will confirm the presence of an incredible high-tech super Type 2 civilization in Gale Crater in terms of ruins, including, as you, Langer, said tonight from Australia, taking that nuclear-powered rover and going deep inside in the rooms that haven't been destroyed. Think of Cameron and his live TV video of the interior of the Titanic,
which was dramatic,
down in HD, in color, all over the world. We could be in for some extraordinary, coherent, connected, synchronized views, both from Mars' surface and from YU-55, with a big disclosure before the end of the apocalyptic 2012 consciousness-raising year, which we're now in within months, within days, actually. You know, 31 days, right?
Yeah, here we go.
And then 2012.
And isn't that amazing? It really is.
Don't hold your breath, because we want you all to be around, but this next year, I think, if this big picture scenario is anywhere close to the truth, is going to be a year you're never going to forget, because it's the year we finally have the tools to become human.
Well, I'll agree with you that 2012 is going to be one heck of a ride, Richard. Let's go to the Skype caller, Peter, in Cleveland, Ohio, to get us started. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hope you're having a good evening.
Good evening.
Richard. I have an idea. I mean, I've been listening to your entire scenario here, but thing is, the Russians has that satellite up there that's orbiting.
You mean spacecraft?
Right, spacecraft.
Supposedly stuck on orbit.
What I was thinking, instead of them actually sending it off to Phobes up there to Mars, maybe it's going to be a way of starting a war where they could just, you know, we're not thinking it's anything, but it's maybe a nuclear bomb to drop in the United States.
No. Sorry, no cigar. Look, you got to get out of the box. You got to stop thinking 30 years ago.
They already have those up there anyway.
Exactly. If somebody wanted to do real mischief, it would have already happened. Don't you get it that this is a set of play-acting scenarios. We're being manipulated to be fearful of this and apprehensive of that and terrified of this. And while they keep us all distracted, they do what they're doing without telling us what they're doing. But now I think the piper is about to be paid, because somebody appears from the sources I'm talking to and the data I'm assembling to have shown up and said the game has to change. And kicking and screaming, they're changing the game. I mean, look at this. They had four landing sites that they had reduced from like hundreds for the Curiosity rover. They could have gone to three other places on Mars. And if you go to the NASA website and you look at the descriptions of those places, they're boring, 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 boring. They could have conducted a mission and looked at rocks and craters and radiation till the cows come home and never revealed anything, and we would never have been the wiser. They went to the one place where they're going to explore. If you look at those photographs on the website or on Facebook, that is stunningly artificial, uncontestable geometry on a human scale that's incredibly ancient, and they won't be able to hide the tools and the whatever, the screens or the computers or the libraries or God knows what they're going to find that's going to be in those stunning color HD resolution 1080 DP pictures they're going to send back. And Ed Weiler, who was the associate administrator of NASA for space science, has been there forever, was in charge of the Hubble debacle and rescued that. Ed Weiler was the ultimate guy in the chain who made the decision, we go to Gale and not the other places. I think Ed is one of us.
He may be. Next up, CJ in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi, CJ. Go ahead.
Oh, how are you guys doing? It's an honor to talk to both of you. Richard, you know, hometown boy. Definitely awesome. I don't know what that guy was talking about with the bombs dropping. That's my, you know, that's why I'm a part of that.
Retro
bigger picture. You're thinking too small. We got to wake up.
Yes.
So my question was about, so I know we have the alien presence already there. I know there's the bad ones and there's the good ones. And I wanted to see if you had anything to put on about the ones that have been helping us out. Because obviously something's helping us.
Well, I think the ones that are helping us out are doing in a very kind of subtle and nuanced way. I mean, think Gene Roddenberry's Prime Directive. In fact, the more I think about this, the more I think you have lots and lots of clues if you just watch Star Trek. Because Gene was definitely an insider. In fact, when I did my Awaken Aware conference, which had the backstory George people really need to see to get the full dimension of this, including Obama's role in the last 30 minutes, they need to go to www.awakenaware2011.com. That will take you to the three-hour presentation I did on Elohim with the mathematics and the layout, the connection between that and YU55, and the big surprise at the end with Obama. This is a major nuanced way to shift civilization, if I'm right, from a dead-end track where we walk over the cliff and we kill 7 billion people to where we wind up saving 7 billion people. And the players have been at this a long time. In fact, I think they're part of a very ancient Egyptian-derived secret society called the Shemsu Hor, or the Followers of Horus, whose mission, their mission statement, which is thousands of years old in the ancient Egyptian text, is to return to the first time, meaning before the catastrophe, which wiped out civilization when we all could be human.
What is it about space, Richard, that got you so excited when you were a youngster? Something happened.
Well, if you want me to be really coast-like tonight, I have a feeling that there's some kind of memories nibbling way, way back there when I was a kid. It was like I knew that this was not all there was and that I needed to do things to be in a position to be part of the big picture when the big picture came. I can't prove any of that. That's just kind of an intuition. But I look at my life, I look at my career choices, I look at winding up working for Walter Cronkite. You know, I wound up working for NASA. I wound up knowing the right people, being connected to the right visions, the right dreams, the right, there is no limit except that which we can impose upon ourselves. I'm at the right place at the right time, and I'm watching the right things unfold, and I'm in the position tonight to be doing things that actually are affecting the river. And I have this extraordinary friend sitting in a chair there in St. Louis tonight. I have access to millions of our friends through the Coast family. I have a Facebook page, two pages that won't quit. We're in a position to change the future, because the one thing that the bad guys could do to win would be to keep all this secret. Our job, our mission, should we all choose to accept it, is to tell everybody we know, spread it across Facebook, across the planet. This is the time to actually get the data to make us realize who we really are and what we're all doing in this place and what we should be doing compared to what we are doing and what we can have if we simply demand it. It's like occupy everything.
That's a good point, Richard. Kevin is in Vancouver, and he's on. Go ahead, Kev.
Hey, guys. Wonderful show, and a long time no chit-chat. I had a chance to talk to both of you a couple of years ago. I think Richard must have some off-world email going on here because he's doing an exceptional job. But I just wanted to sort of bring it down in the sense of our 3D terrestrial stuff. I just wondered what his opinion was of the alleged Fourth Reich Argentina secret space guys that are booting around apparently with some back engineered things, and throw into the pile the along the lines of your spiral, the that light over the Dome of the Rock some months ago. So, and then last but not least, those amazing images from the Antarctic of these celestial bodies, be it a second sun or some sort of planetoid. Just wondering what his thoughts and opinions were on that, and I can't say how wonderful it is to hear voices and a host that are sort of focusing on the right information at the right time. It's just awesome to have you guys going on about this. And I've been very fortunate. I had a little bit of involvement with the situation with Billy Meyer.
Oh, sure.
And so that being said, I just wanted to get your thoughts and opinions and see what you have to say there, Richard.
All right. Go ahead, Richard. We got a minute to go.
Well, I think there is a secret space program. I think Joseph and I are right that it came from the Nazis, World War II, cracking the hyperdimensional codes, maybe having some help from outside. Joseph and I differ with this, but I look at the stunning technological leaps that the Nazis made in the brief period of time, and it does not look natural. It looks like they had outside help. And Gene Roddenberry, bless his soul, actually did a Star Trek based on that premise, that the Federation shows up and accidentally bequeaths technology to one group on a two-planet system that turn out to be like Nazi imitators, because that was the quickest way they felt they could develop society, and it was the deadly wrong choice. But in other words, Gene, I think, was trying to tell us something between the lines, that yes, the Nazis did do a whole bunch of interesting stuff. There is a breakaway civilization out there. Talk to Richard Dolan if you want confirmation of particulars, and they could be a problem. However, maybe the guys who have shown up are not their friends, but maybe they're their enemies, and they're keeping them in check while we go through this prime directive process of finding out for ourselves, which is the only empowering way disclosure can happen. If disclosure happens with spaceships hanging over Washington, you wind up with Independence Day.
That's exactly right. Richard, we'll be back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to be talking with Jonas Elrod and Steve Hutinski. He's the film producer of Wake Up, about Jonan's really incredible events that happened to him. One day, suddenly, he began seeing and hearing angels, demons, auras. We're going to talk to him about what happened to him. When we come back in a moment, more with Richard C. Hoagland in your final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Richard, you're looking at a connection here on why they gave President Obama the Nobel Prize for peace. What's the tie-in here?
Well, if we have new friends have shown up, and Obama is part of a lineage, which is what I lay out at the Awake and Aware conference, going back thousands of years preparing for this pivotal moment in time, in terms of celestial history. Remember, this is all on a cosmic clock. The Mayans were talking about cycles. You keep asking, how do the Mayans know? Well, they knew because they had a legacy.
Yep.
They had their ancient scrolls that told them certain things happen according to celestial dates, because that's how the physics is modulated with this alignment with the galactic center. So we're coming up on this alignment. Wouldn't you, if you were part of this incredibly ancient priesthood tradition going back thousands of years called in Egypt the Shemsuor, the followers of Horus, wouldn't you plan for one of your guys to be the commander-in-chief of the most powerful nation on the planet when the you-know-what hits the rotating receptacle?
Probably, yeah.
All the weird stuff around Obama's history, his lineage, his birth certificate, his being not, no one knows friends, they don't know girlfriends, no one's stood up at his wedding. I mean, it's like this guy parachutes in out of nowhere. In fact, he himself, at the Jackson Day dinner in 2008 with John McCain, made jokes about how Khalil had sent him here to save the Earth. Remember that?
Yep.
And everybody takes it as a joke. What if it's not a joke at this level? That he is one of a group of people prepared to try to move the river at a critical time to where we don't destroy civilization, we save it. And when I saw that group, remember, I'm the guy who won the bet, George, because I said, this is it. This is the guy.
Yeah, you did.
How did I know? I knew it based on this kind of data. I projected it.
And that's when Hillary was way out
of. Oh, he was 20% and she was 80%.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why you thought I had a snowball's chance in hell of ever sitting in that chair.
That's why I made the bet.
See, don't bet against me because I use something called science. Anyway.
That's right. Let's take some final calls.
The Norway spiral, I think, was as a visible symbol to other members of the group. This is the guy. This is the, this is going to sound awful, the anointed one. Mm-hmm. And start your clocks, gentlemen. And the clock has been running, and we're now getting down to where things are really going to get interesting.
Well, you know, you're going to be on my December 21st Friday night show next.
Unless I get a better offer like Mars.
Like Mars. But we'll see. Anyways, Bill.
I will phone home.
Let's go to West Hartford, Connecticut. It's the astronomer, Bill. Hi, Bill.
William. Hi, Richard. It's a pleasure to talk with you again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Richard, I have a great question tonight that couldn't be more appropriate. It's scientific, but it's also sociological and philosophical. Coming after the first hour of tonight's Ghost Show with Jerry Corsi and Iran and the possibility of World War III, because it relates nuclear war to ETs, to ancient ETs, and to the show George Norrie was on many times, Ancient Aliens, on the History Channel. And my question expands on the final point of each episode of that show, Ancient Aliens, that asks, what do the aliens want from humanity today? And my question specifically is, and George, I'm not going to ramble on because I'm going to read it. It'll be in just 20 seconds right
All
now.
Right.
Richard, my question expands on the ancient aliens premise, could the God, quote-unquote God, of the Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, also be really alien-inspired as well, meaning that ancient ETs inspired these biblical books, the Bible and the Quran, with the contemporary purpose of seeing if we humans can somehow overcome our religious differences and use the cerebral cortex, which maybe the Anunnaki put into our brains to override the God part of the brains, and as an alien's evolutionary test for humanity, rationally not succumb to a World War III, so that then we may join some kind of real life version of Star Trek's United Federation of the Planets. What do you think of that?
You want a one line answer?
No, give me two.
I think we need a whole show for that, Bill. I did a conference with Mike Heiser and a bunch of other people, David Flynn, Hugh Ross, in Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin in 2003, called God, Man, and E.T. I think you should get a set of those DVDs. They're on our website at Film Baby. Get a set, watch the whole thing, and then let's have the conversation. That's not a trivial question, and I cannot do it justice in 2 minutes. So watch the God Man ET conference, and then let's pick up the conversation including on Facebook.
Let's go to Allie in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Allie, go ahead.
Hi there. It's just fascinating listening to you two. And what my question for Richard is what can you tell us about the crater chains that have been found on Mars and just about every place but Earth?
Well, you don't find stuff like that on Earth because it erodes too quickly. I mean, the atmosphere and life itself really makes ancient things go away really, really, really fast. The reason we see these signatures in other places is there's basically nothing going on. They're dead surfaces. They're exposed to a vacuum. There's no oxygen, no corrosion, no erosion, so they're preserved. Now, the chains themselves are very strange because the gravity of these small bodies, like the moon or the moons of Jupiter or Saturn or whatever, are too small to cause fragmentation. So I have been looking at these crater chains, particularly like on Phobos, where you see these pockmarks all in a row, and they frankly look like weapons fire.
Ah, like something hit it.
Think of a beam pulsing, and you're moving it across good old sci-fi movies, ray guns, pop, 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 and every time it would hit the surface, you get an explosion, so you get a series of craters that look like impacts, but in fact are not.
Interesting, Richard.
Geometry.
Okay. Let's go next to Edward, Santa Clara, California. Edward, take it away.
How you guys doing?
Good
morning.
Edward.
Just want to say, Richard, I remember you from my Alan Sean Feinstein days years ago.
Oh, my gosh. Do you have those stamps yet?
Oh, yeah, I still got them.
Oh, save them. They're going to become extremely valuable.
Yeah, I've also got the Space Shots cards. I also wanted to ask you about Silver Hill, Stonehenge. I know the landscaping area you had mentioned years ago about how it was similar to Sedonia.
Yep.
Landscape of Sedonia. I was wondering if you had any follow-up on that at enterprisemission.com.
Well, not yet. I actually have to do a follow-up. I need to do a paper on the measurements that we carried out this summer at Stonehenge, Silver Hill, and Avebury with the HD Accutron detector, because we got stunning, amazing readings for, you know, just an ancient pile of stones. These things apparently were designed by the legacy civilizations, the civilizations that came in between the really, really ancient guys that knew a whole lot of stuff and us, that people like John Wester have been investigating in Egypt and Robert Bevall and Graham Hancock. These legacy civilizations, the folks like Bill Stonehenge, they obviously knew that if you set up the right rocks in the right configuration, you wind up with a passive solid-state amplifier of the background HD torsion field. And that they did for certain specific purposes, not the least of which is it has an incredibly positive effect on biology. When Robin and I were in Guatemala and Mexico measuring the pyramids there, we had a Mayan guide in Guatemala that NBC had hired. And I watched his eyes bug out as we're sitting on the pyramid, and he's watching on the screen these readings, this force field reading that his great-great-great-grandmothers had told him about as part of the Mayan heritage that he had never seen in Western science, and it's right there on the screen. So then he tells me interesting stories about why the Mayans built these ceremonial complexes where the pyramids were located, where all the nobles were, the elites of society. They lived around these city squares with these huge pyramids, which I was proving as we're talking was amplifying this background torsion field. And those guys lived to be like 95, 98, 100. And the peasants, the ones who fed them, who provided the sustenance of civilization, the 99% out in the fields 30, 40 miles away, they dropped dead at 40. So the physics, the measurable HD physics of building these ceremonial centers with masses of active limestone in, you know, resonating with the background torsion field, kept those guys alive decades longer than the poor guys out in the fields doing the planting and providing foodstuffs for the elite of their civilization. Gosh, does that sound vaguely familiar, George?
It sure does. Go ahead, Edward. What was that?
I've been to Tikal myself, and I remember I had a strange feeling while I was there, Tikal, Guatemala. Something else. Also, You know, when it comes to the economy, I remember Richard had mentioned something about how the economy is going to explode once disclosure happens, maybe by 2012. Could the reason why we're so far in debt and, you know, they're just basically printing money out of thin air is because they know that this is going to happen in the future, so might as well, you know, make money while they can
exactly.
Right now.
Exactly. It's the 1840s gold rush. You put your finger on it. It's the ultimate in insider trading. They're betting on a future that is so different than what's been projected, and they can cream out the best first because they have inside knowledge of what is going to happen.
Are you happy with the way this is going to all unfold?
Well, if it doesn't end in a nuclear war, yeah.
Well, but that's a possibility, isn't it?
Not really. No, not really. Did you see the satellite imagery of those facilities in Iran the other night?
Yeah, I sure did.
And they have been blown to smithereens?
That wasn't an accident. I was just going to say that.
Someone did that.
No coincidences.
Exactly. It is the way this stuff should be done. Not the Bush way, which is you take half of the, you know, the 10th Mountain Division and invade with Abrams tanks. You send a small team or use a small satellite or a small drone and you take out the bad stuff and you don't have to go to war. You don't have to kill tens and hundreds of thousands of people. That is so retro.
Back to the phones we go. Chip in Raleigh, North Carolina. Go ahead, Chip.
Fantastic. Thank you, George. And thank you, Richard, for having me on tonight. I am a StreamLink member, and it's well worth every dime to have, especially for us 9-to-5ers.
Great.
My wife and I host a small podcast at mindcemetery.net, and I will not have the opportunity to...
What a name.
Yes, it is a very, very good name, and I will not have a chance to ask you any questions, I don't think, Richard, besides this one. During an interview with Jim Mars a while back, you coined the term fear porn, which... Brilliant. I love it. You know, there are many things that we will agree on. There are many things we will not agree on. During that interview, you stated that Comet Elenin was a constructed craft with triangulated shields around it, and you provided photographs as evidence for that. And it was piloted by what I will call exiled Nazis. That isn't your
thing. No, I never said that.
Okay.
Never said that.
That interview is up for...
I never said that. No. You are...
Everyone can review that interview with Jim Mars that you did if they Google it.
You are confabulating two separate ideas.
Okay.
I never said Elenin had anything to do with the breakaway civilization. I said that if someone sent it, it was sent here on a mission 13,000 years ago from a time when we last faced the catastrophes we are looking at now. And it was sent by someone who wanted us to make it to survive this transition and sent vital information to be used to basically change civilization. Nothing to do with Nazis, nothing to do with the breakaways, nothing to do with contemporary history.
Now, Mars might have mentioned Nazis.
Well, we did discuss Nazis in the conversation because how can you? He's done a hell of a job in researching the terrestrial history of Nazis.
Right.
And Farrell and I have looked into the space aspects and where they've gone. I mean... I know the La Crosse mission, the NASA mission to so-called find water on the moon.
Right.
It was really a very clandestine effort to look at the Nazi base. They landed near the South Pole. They were forced to redirect away from being right next door. And I think it was the precursor to the X-37B missions, which are conducted secretly out of Schreiber Air Force Base. And they have an office there called the Rapid Capability Office. That was lit up the night that YU-55 flew by for three nights, before, during, and after. And I know this from absolutely solid sources. So there's a lot going on here that we're not privy to. I'm trying to put the dots in public to give people enough information to make rational decisions. And I tell everybody, don't take my word for it. Go and Google and look for this yourself, because a lot of it is open source. You just have to know what you're looking for.
Richard, only a few minutes to go. Any conferences or events that you're going that people might want to come and see you?
Well, no, but I'm involved in a secret mission with Robin that I can't really talk about, that I will be able to talk about if it works successfully.
You are the greatest teaser I've ever heard.
I don't want to paint a big bullseye on our backs for the bad guys to aim at, okay? But I will tell you that it involves a terrestrial confirmation of the Mars hypothesis we have laid out tonight. If it's real, it is that stunning, and everyone in the Coast family will be front and center, because I obviously am not going to sit on it when I know it's for real.
In terms of the Curiosity launch, everything's going well with that now that they've launched it?
Well, something very weird happened during the launch. I don't know whether you followed the launch, but there were all kinds of radio transmission problems from launch through the burn that got them out of orbit. And they were communicating not with a ground station, but line of sight with a satellite called TDRS, for tracking and data relay satellite, which is 22,000 miles over the Atlantic eastern sector, with line of sight communication to the Centaur making the burn. So why were there all the interference problems? I could speculate and say someone was trying to do the same thing with Curiosity that was done to the Russians, but I don't really have any data. It should not have happened, and it happened, and maybe somebody else intervened and kept that mission on track. It's on track now. They'll be doing a mid-course correction to shift the aiming point for Mars in about 12 or 11 days. And after that, they'll do a few little mid-courses, and then we wait, biting our fingernails all the way for those 6 terrifying minutes as it enters the atmosphere of Mars on August 6th, and then the fun begins.
All right, Richard, my friend. For Dan Galante, Will Wilkerson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasor, Tim Banal, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Pundit, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.